Welcome to Nowhere to Run with Christopher White.
Chris in Tennessee, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Everybody, welcome to Nowhere to Run. My name is Chris. This show is going to be a quick, well, I don't know how quick it's going to be. I'm going to try to make it quick, a quick addendum to the last show that I did called Rethinking Gog and Magog. I'm going to try to go through some of the cons to that whole concept and some of the pros to it as well. It's always tricky when you kind of put forth theories like this and you know people are listening and you have a kind of a responsibility. I know that other hosts and podcasters and stuff know what I'm talking about, or really anybody. I know that it can be really risky to kind of put out a theory about this stuff and then, you know, just to be wrong, especially about things that are important. And that being said, I don't really think there was enough to say that anything's wrong or right here. I just want to go through, to be thorough, to go through the pros and the cons, because like so many things in biblical prophecy, you know, there's always kind of like your pros and cons, and I think that you guys are the ones that need to weigh it out, you know, and so I'm just going to try to just be as transparent as possible here. One thing's for sure, Bible prophecy in general has never been really my forte, but I do think that being said, I looked over, let me quickly summarize the theory from the last show, and I think that would help. Basically, the war, the so-called war of Gog Magog in Ezekiel 38:39, which describes virtually the same thing as Revelation 20. And I tried to write the bare bones things that are the same about those two events here, and I'll just read that bare bones thing right here. A huge army will be amassed, which God refers to as Gog Magog in both of these, or in one of them he refers to it as Gog Magog outright in Revelation, and then in Ezekiel 38:39 he definitely indicates that Gog Magog is the main player in it. So kind of a match there. That army will try to converge on the general area of Jerusalem, Israel, but God will destroy it with fire from heaven, and the nations will know that he is God afterwards. The bare bones things are similar between the Ezekiel 38:39 passages and Revelation 20. Well, first of all, my theory is that, well, the general theory, going theory, is that Ezekiel 38:39 is speaking of a war that will happen essentially any day now, or, you know, sometime in the near future, in our temporal kind of time. And then the other theory, and that the other war in Revelation 20 is, of course, as it says very plainly in Revelation 20, verse 7, that it is after the millennia period. So we've got another 1,000 years before that war happens. That war is literally after the War of Armageddon. It's the final battle on the earth, apparently, because then things get really, really, really good after that battle. That's when Satan's finally totally destroyed after that. So that's where we're at. Now, if you listen to that podcast, basically I was saying that there is no reason to think that the Ezekiel 38:39 passages have to be a future separate war than the final one, which basically means that we shouldn't really be expecting this Ezekiel 38:39 war right now, because it seems to be happening there. And I go through a lot of the details of why the reasons to think that are. So let me go through both of the pros and cons here. Let's go through the cons first. I think that would help. First, problems with the theory. This was emailed to me by a listener and a friend who was on last night, but he also emailed me today. He said his conclusions after looking at these two passages are that they have to be two separate events. After the war in Ezekiel, Israel is burning the weapons for fuel for 7 years and cleaning up after the mess of the war for 7 months. after the war in Revelations is the great white throne judgment, where every man is judged and the earth and the sky as we know it is no more. After the judgment is the new heaven and the new earth and the new judgment. I do agree that these two prophecies are really similar, but I think there's a clear distinction between two. Let me know what you think. Okay, I would agree this is a pretty good point, because there has to be 7 years, you know, after the war, in 7 years that potentially they could use energy. And so I think you could fit that into a war that just starts, say, the tribulation period, and using that energy there. I could see that happening more logically, although there would probably be just some disruptions in there, especially if it was Israel that was supposed to be using it, but maybe not. And obviously you would have, if this was being done at the end of Revelation 20, then you would indeed have a problem there, I think, even though I'm really not sure. But if it happens there, and then he throws, and death, and at the end of 20 it says, and death and hell were cast into the lake of fire, and this is the second death, and whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. And then the next line in verse 21 says, and I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. Okay, so keep in mind, there would have to be these weapons being burned for some sort of, you know, energy purpose for 7 years, even though there was no more sea and heaven and earth passed away. I will say that, I mean, the time frame really isn't that clear. I mean, it does give the impression of being pretty immediately after the casting into the lake of the fire, or really after the end of the war itself. The time frame does seem to go pretty rapidly there, although it's not clear, but I won't try to say that too. I don't really know that, but also an indication that they wouldn't probably need it, and I stress the word probably need energy, is because and there shall be no night there. And I thought that was something. They also mentioned here that the city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon to shine in it, for the glory of God did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof. And the nations of them which are saved shall walk in the light of it, and the kings of the earth do bring their glory and honor into it. Well, that's interesting, okay? Because I think we assume, well, hey, this is so vastly different, there wouldn't be any reason to, you know, burn anything for 7 years. But then there's kings of the earth that do bring their glory and honor into it. I mean, there's still kings of the earth. There still is a new earth which needs kings. So that's interesting. It just suggests that while this new earth may be incredibly vastly different than anything that we can think of, it still has this kind of earthly feel to it. So while I think this is probably the best argument that I've seen so far for it, and I would have to just kind of delay it on this, on the sense that I don't think it's quite enough, you know. But I will say it's definitely a very good argument against the theory. A few more con arguments here would be that it's possible that the argument, which is that you couldn't possibly see Ezekiel 38 verse 11 be fulfilled, which says, and thou shalt say, I will go up to the land of unwalled villages. I will go to them that are at rest, that dwell safely, all of them dwelling without walls and having neither bars nor gates. Now, that could not be fulfilled tomorrow or, you know, any perceivable day right now, because this is not the case in Israel. They are expecting danger. They are not dwelling safely. They are not dwelling without walls, especially not all of them, and they don't all have neither bars nor gates. Those are a lot of qualifiers, basically saying it's a serious time of peace, and they really believe the peace. So it's possible, of course, that this could be during the false peace that the Antichrist sets up. And if so, then it would it would definitely be after that. And so we'd still have to wait for that to happen and peace to settle in. And that's a possibility. I could see that, if that was the case. And that would at least make more sense for the 7 years of using the, you know, the fuel after that, because there would be that peace agreement would be made for 7 years. But I also should say that this, of course, would be perfectly fulfilled if it happened when, in Revelation 20, when it was a thousand years of literally no reason to suspect anything, or have bars or gates, or not even have the remembrances of bars or gates. And you do have the qualifier of Revelation 20 saying expressly that it's after the millennial reign, and Ezekiel 38 and 39 not mentioning any time frame. So, again, I see it possibly being fulfilled then, and definitely being able to be fulfilled when it expressly says the time. So the question then becomes, is there a reason for double fulfillment, or is it just simply clarifying? So anyway, let's move on to some more negative points. Okay, there's two that Chuck Missler mentions, and I was really disappointed because I tried to find Chuck Missler was about the only person online that has even ever mentioned anything about this, hardly at all, and I was really kind of disappointed on the references that he, and the reasons he believed it, and the lack of mentioning a few different things. But I'll say really quickly, the two things that he mentions in, and he says kind of like people that think that the war of Gog and Magog, when they read it superficially, as he says, in Revelation 20, they try to fit the Ezekiel war into that, not realizing that it can't possibly fit because of these two things. One, the four quarters, which is what is said in Revelation, it says that they come, Gog and Magog descends on Jerusalem from the four quarters. And Chuck says in both writing and in audio that the reason this can't be is because it's actually, as Ezekiel says, it descends from the north, Gog and Magog does, which technically it does. Gog and Magog does descend from the north, but the four quarters should be noticed that in Gog and Magog, I mean, they're definitely coming from every direction. I mean, it names out, like, I really think that Ezekiel is just a detailed version of this, and it details the where the countries are and which ones are going to be converging on it. And what's interesting is that they are from all around Israel, completely in every direction that surrounding Israel, which these armies are going to come from. So then it becomes, well, is four quarters allegory? You know, what do you want to allegorize here? Mr. Missler is wanting to allegorize Gog Magog. He's wanting to say that it's actually a demon god, and it's just here, it's just a symbol and not actually them. And he bases that on a Septuagint translation where Gog is referred to as a demon god, which I'm not necessarily doubting, but I don't see any reason to say that that's allegory here and the four quarters is not referring to, you know, four directions instead of the four uttermost ends of the earth. You know, he's saying, well, you can't just go ahead and allegorize four quarters. It's clearly coming from the north. But in Ezekiel 38, they don't just come from the north. It comes from all directions. And if that's the more detailed description of the quick description that's said in Revelation 20, then I see a problem there with just kind of picking and choosing which things to take literally and not to. And keep in mind, I'm like the biggest Chuck Missler fan on the planet. I mean, really, I really am. I very rarely disagree with him on anything, but this is just interesting, and it's just weird. So, anyway, and the second thing that he says is that, and this, if true, if anybody can find this, then this ends it. But he doesn't explain this anywhere, he just says it. He says that Ezekiel 38 and 39 happen before the second coming of Christ, where the one in Revelation 20 would happen after, 1,000 years after the second coming of Christ. And I can find no mention of that anywhere. I mean, obviously Ezekiel 38 and 39 doesn't expressly put a time frame at all in there. So unless some kind of allusion is being made with the latter verses from Ezekiel, which very well is possible, that there, it can make a solid case for maybe the verses of Ezekiel 40 to, 49 or whatever, where they're talking about what I think most biblical scholars seem to agree is the millennial temple. So I guess my question is, how is he's only using those two things, and then when, and all the commentaries, when it gets down to the part where God destroys the advancing army of Israel with fire from heaven, he just ignores it. I mean, I'm sure he doesn't ignore everywhere. I'm sure he has a commentary somewhere where he says, this is a little weird. It's just like the one in Ezekiel 38:39, did the same thing, but he just glazes over it. And I think I think we're dealing with something a little more profound here in the connections that at least, you know, you'd think Mr. Missler would be like, you know, this is pretty interesting. There's some really profound, significant connections between this verse and that one. But it's just, it's especially because it names it clearly as Gog Magog, and, you know, it's a huge army advancing on Israel that is destroyed by God, which causes people to worship him. And it's just destroyed in the same way by God. But he just makes it out to be that they're so completely different. Anybody that thinks that they're the same is just crazy. And then that's the kind of same impression that I get from people online, too, that you find these in, like, the comment section of, like, Ezekiel 38 and 39 commentaries. There's some kind of person at the end of the commentary saying, I happen to notice that the one in Revelation 20 seems to be really similar. You know, what's the deal? And they poured out a lot of different things, and I don't know. And again, if you can find anywhere that suggests that the second coming of Christ, that Ezekiel 38 and 39 must be before the second coming of Christ, and that can be validated, then this is all over, you know, as far as I'm concerned. If it's a solid foundation, and I'm sure that he's got a reason for saying it. I'm not saying he's lying. So, you know, we'll just move on here, because I think that I want to move on to the pros here in a little bit too, but I just, as I said, I just want to kind of put out both versions of the story here. And of course, this is the last thing here, that it is shaping up to be this war. You know, it seems to be happening before our eyes. And as I pointed out in the Frank and Chris show, what's interesting to me about the way that it's shaping up is it doesn't seem to be... it seems like some of the stuff that's happening with Turkey, and granted, I don't really know exactly how it's all working and the loyalties and stuff that those countries have, but it does seem like they are abandoning the West, or the Western influences that we would probably call these neocon kind of New World Order West influences, and joining up and abandoning probably a very lucrative, and it's probably very dangerous and risky for them to join back up with their cousins to the east, the Russians, and their neighbors, along with Iran, in this crucial time. But so they're doing something that's anti-West, in one hand, I'm saying it just seems like this is all very naturally occurring, as opposed to possibly, which I can see, I could easily argue from the other end that this is happening in a very human kind of way, this provoking of Russia, which is possible too, especially, you know, God can work and often does work through, you know, evil people doing evil things. But so that's the last of the cons. And so let me move into a few of the pros. Now, first, I mentioned the pros being that they are, both passages are talking of a huge army that will be amassed, which Gog refers to as Gog and Magog. And this army will try to converge on the area of Jerusalem, but God will destroy it with fire from heaven, and the nations will know that he is God after. And the beginnings in Ezekiel 37 is kind of leading up to that as well, and as well as the passages directly after in Ezekiel 40, and in Revelation 21, you have similar themes going on there with the measuring of the temple, measuring of that, which I think clearly links them biblically. I think that that's a definite pro in showing that there should be a link between those things. And if it is supposedly a biblical link, something that we should be saying, hey, these things are connected, then it would be a logical assumption to think that what seems to be so clear is that one's just a detailed description of the other, and there's enough evidence in there to easily tie them together. And I don't know if I'm crazy or what, but I mean, but again, let me just go through some of these pros, because I'm not convinced of it. And as I said before, I'm really not a prophecy, you know, guy. And really, it's one of those things that are so wrapped up in so much different eschatology and this kind of thing. It's just not my bag, you know. I really, you know, I just would rather be doing other things that aren't so important feeling, you know, where, like, if you get them wrong, you're like, yeah, I want to be wrong about, you know, God's word. And I could easily be wrong about some, you know, stupid conspiracy theory, you know, that doesn't affect anybody, but this is different, I think. So, anyway, another pro is that the Unwalled Villages thing fits far better in my eyes, and the also does the known and the eyes of the Lord, which seems to be the purpose for, again, both of these wars, which I think are the same war, but even if they're different, the purpose for both of them seems to be that God declares that all people will know that he is the Lord because of this miraculous saving. And I think that that would be more logically happening, because the next, you know, the next verses in Revelation 21 and all that stuff is like talking about, you know, some serious different stuff. A new heaven, a new earth, Jerusalem, where like earth is here, but it's like way better, and like weird, cool stuff is happening. So that's where I would more expect everybody to know that he is the Lord, and directly after that, you know. And because that's when the great white throne judgment happens anyway, where, you know, everybody's going to know he's the Lord. So that would seem like a better fit there than you would, because if this was going to happen in a current time, it would have to happen directly around the beginning of, and I'm not saying it won't, and I'm not saying it's not a double fulfillment of prophecy necessarily, but if it did, it would probably have to happen directly after, or enough time for there to be enough peace for Ezekiel 38:8 to be fulfilled. And then, so if this war happens right around, let's say, 3.5 years or something like that, you know, into the peace agreement, then you have the paradox again of those 3.5 years. Is everybody going to know that the Lord is God? I don't know, because you still have Armageddon, you still have wars and things happening. Granted, there are passages that would make, you know, people make you think that, you know, people do start to figure out that he's the Lord there, so maybe that's some tie-in there. So maybe. Another thing is that this one, and I'm not sure, I think Missler addresses this one, but I'll say it anyway. If Gog and his army are destroyed, you know, in Ezekiel, then what are they doing, you know, showing up again 1,000 years later? Which, on its surface, sounds like a pretty good argument, but if it's just talking about a people, you could see how maybe that in 1,000 years is enough time to replenish your people and, you know, whatever, especially during the peace of the millennia, where there would be enough reason, there would be a massive population increase, because there would be enough food, and there wouldn't be any wars, wouldn't be any disease, so there would be more than enough time to build back a population there. Okay, in conclusion, I guess I just want to say that I think the first thing is that I don't see any reason for this to be a double fulfillment of prophecy. I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be looked at as Ezekiel 38 and 39 with no time frame being a detailed version of Revelation 20, you know, starting at verse 8, let's say, of with a time frame, a definite time frame. I see them being linked biblically with the very, very similar themes. I think John had the intention to link Ezekiel, and I think that he was obviously very aware of Ezekiel. So I see that happening, and I don't see any reason to see it being a separate event, except for like the thing about the 7 years weapons thing, in which case I'd have to say that that's just, to me, a technicality that can be chalked up to not really understanding the nature of any of these realities as far as what's going to happen after the Great White Throne Judgment. And I think a lot of the arguments tend to be like, well, we won't need any of this, or we won't be doing that when this happens, or we won't have this kind of thing, or we won't need this, or we won't do that, and we won't have this. But until those things can be really solidified, I think that's not good reasons to throw out the obvious connection there. If, however, it can be demonstrated that Ezekiel 38 and 39 must happen before the second coming of Christ, as Chuck Missler has said in his writing and in his presentation, then that would certainly change things. But I didn't see any indication of that after looking around, and that was the thing that really, you know, was confusing to me too, is that I wasn't finding a lot of information at all really even talking about this, which was just kind of like a mild red flag there, because I would look at all these, you know, commentaries and discussions about the Gog-Magog War, and they would go through the whole thing and never even mention Revelation 20. And this is important because Revelation 20 says, you know, it mentions Gog-Magog. If they were just doing a concordance that says, where are all the places that says Gog-Magog? You know, right there in Revelation 20, not only does it say it, it tells you exactly when it's going to happen, or at least that Gog-Magog War. And it just so happens that the exact same thing happens. You know, they're gathered together from the four quarters and whatever that is, and they march on Israel, but they're destroyed, you know, before they get there, and glory is given to God. So, I mean, I think that's significant. It's significant and suspicious by its omission from our entire study of this situation being so clear. So I have been rambling. It's late, and I'm just sorry if I've been misinforming people. This is just not my bag, and so just accept my apology and know that I don't have the answers to anything. I mean, I am probably wrong about something like 43.6% of everything that I've ever said on all these things. So I encourage you again, how you support the show is to pray for me. Pray for me, especially to, you know, not give out this bad information if it's bad or whatever, just to stay in line in that regard. I will say this in conclusion, though. It doesn't matter about the Ezekiel or Revelation War or whatever. I really think that all this aside, we're talking about this happening very soon. I could really see, let's say, the rapture or the Black Awakening / Antichrist revealing / rapture happening very quickly. I could even see it having something to do with CERN or something like that. What if they did release this locust nest of demons that empowered all these people to go do the Black Awakening? Who, of course, would these demons be the most mad at? The people that have been rebuking them and sending them to the abyss the whole time. So that would cause all that thing, which would immediately set the plan up for the revealing of the Antichrist. That thing could happen any day. You know, I really do think though that's going to trigger the rapture, essentially. But I don't know. So I'm just saying, we don't need an Ezekiel War to have, you know, the promises of the Harpazo. But we should just do as Luke said and pray every day that we can be accounted worthy to escape all these things, because it's going to get really bad. And if I'm totally wrong about that, which, listen to me, I probably am. I mean, I'm sure we're all going to be here Thursday morning and be like, you know, but, if, and I say that because Rosh Hashanah is kind of, I think, as far as I can gather, it's kind of ends, it'd be all over by Thursday. So, anyway, I don't know. Just forget it. As I talk, I'm probably giving out any more information. But as I guess what I'm saying is that even if we are still here and we still got to go through a lot of this stuff, which is quite possible, it won't be that much stuff. We might be through Satan's wrath, which I think we already are going through quite a little bit of. We're probably not even getting half of it yet, but we'll probably go through a lot of that, but we're not going to go through the really, really tough stuff, like the bowls of wrath, that kind of stuff, if you read in your Bible, is not something that we want to deal anything with. I don't even think the trumpets are really going to be us at all. I think we're out of here by the sixth seal, personal opinion, and of course, I'm probably undoing any good that I did on this particular podcast by just conjecturing wildly, so I will get out of here while I still can. So thanks for listening to my rambles, and I'll talk to you, hopefully, not too soon.